gust on the surface. It sank deep, all the way to his bones. "Do you know what I was told as a child about these mountains?" he said, feeling the need to make conversation.
"What?"
Lucia asked, her eyes still trained on the path ahead. He'd all but forgotten them until now. All the stories told by adults to children about the Forbidden Mountains. Jonas never had patience for tales of fantasy or magic. He much preferred to be out hunting, even when he could barely lift a bow.
"I was told that they're ancient witches, cursed for using their dark magic against the first king of Mythica, just after the world was created. I've heard other legends about them, but yours doesn't surprise me at all,"
Lucia said under her breath.
"Witches are always blamed for everything, when most of them don't have enough magic to light a single candle."
"Why is that, do you suppose?" he wondered aloud.
"What?"
"Witches. They definitely exist, I know that now. But their magic is harmless, unlike the stories."
"I wouldn't say that. Even the weakest elementia can be strengthened by blood, which is apparently how my grandmother managed to help Cain with his ritual. So if a witch strengthens her magic to a dangerous level, and if her intentions are dark, she is most definitely not harmless."
Jonas didn't know how many witches there were, only that if one was descended from an exiled watcher, they had a chance to have magic within them.
"I suppose you're right. And we should be thankful that only you have as much magic as you do."
Lucia didn't reply.
"Princess?"
he asked, frowning.
"You still have your magic, don't you?"
She flinched.
"It's weakened again. I don't know how much time it will take to return fully to me, or if that's even a possibility."
Lucia looked at him over her shoulder. Her eyes were wide and glassy. Jonas felt his heart drop.
"You aren't just a common witch," he said, shaking his head. "You are a sorceress, the sorceress. I know, but it's Lyssa. Somehow she's stolen my magic ever since I was pregnant with her. But I swear to the goddess, even if I don't have a shred of Elementia within me, I will save her, no matter what I have to do."
"And I will help you," Jonas said firmly. Even though the thought that her magic was no longer reliable enough to aid them in battle against Cain chilled him.
"I promise I will. Thank you."
Lucia held his gaze for a moment before she nodded and turned away from him.
"Now keep walking. We're almost there."
Jonas did as she said, one foot in front of the other. He forced himself to keep walking, even though every step was a test of his courage. These mountains had always been a part of his life, a chilling sight in the Far East, no matter where in Palsea one went. They entered the foothills, and any remaining struggling vegetation they'd passed in the previous dusty miles disappeared completely. The skies were gray, as if a storm stirred, and in the distance above the mountains, even darker clouds blocked out the sun. As they moved deeper into the Black Mountains, Jonas realized it felt even colder than Lemeros here. It was a frigid kind of cold, an iciness that sank into his bones and settled there. The kind of cold he knew couldn't be chased away by a warm blanket and a campfire. He rubbed his chest over the spiral watcher's mark. The cold seemed to push deeper into him precisely in that spot, like the tip of a blade searching for his heart.
"This place," he began. "It feels like death."
Lucia nodded.
"I know. There's an absence of magic here. An absence of life itself. From what little I understand, that's what has bled into Palsea over generations, causing your land to wither and die."
Jonas looked around at their barren surroundings. He shuddered.
"Like the rotten part of a peach that starts to spread through the whole basket."
"Exactly.
Luckily, in the midst of all this death is... that,"
They'd breached a gray rocky hill, and on the other side, where Lucia now gestured, lay a sight that made Jonas's breath catch. A thick shard of purple crystal, as tall as three men, jutted up from a small patch of greenery in the distance. Beyond that small circle of life and beauty lay only black, scorched ground.
"This is where I fought Cayan," Lucia said grimly, as she climbed the steep hill leading to the monolith.
"It wasn't in mortal form, then?"
"It looked like it did in the dream that you witnessed.
A gigantic monster made of fire."
"You were so brave in that dream," he said,
remembering the cloaked girl who stood in front of the fire god and swore she would stop him.
"I can't honestly say I was that brave in real life. But this..."
She slid her hand over the amethyst ring she always wore.
"Protected me like it would have protected Eva when she wore it. And Cayan, he exploded. I thought surely it had killed him, but it only destroyed the body he'd been using as a vessel. I blacked out, and when I came to, I was in the sanctuary."
Jonas couldn't fathom how frightening that must have been, to be faced with a true monster with no one to turn to, no one to help. He had misjudged this girl for far too long. She'd been through so much, it was a miracle she'd made it out alive and sane. He looked up at the monolith as they drew closer to it.
"So this is a gateway to another world, like the stone wheels."
"Yes," she said.
"This is where that magic originated from, the ability to walk between worlds. I just hope, now that we're finally here, that it works with my magic being so unreliable."
"I have faith in you," Jonas said. "End your magic." Lucia turned to him with red-rimmed eyes, as if expecting him to follow up that statement with something harsher, something more judgmental. Instead, he gave her a small smile. He'd meant what he'd said. Despite any dark intent Timotheus ascribed to Lucia, Jonas's faith in her had only grown since the immortal had given him the golden dagger. Jonas thought back to the vision Timotheus had told him about. Lucia with the dagger in her heart, and Jonas standing over her.
"No," Jonas thought. "It's impossible."
Either he'd been wrong or he'd been lying. Timotheus said himself that he'd glimpsed many possible futures. That had been only one of them. Jonas needed answers from the immortal, and he would demand to be told the truth about everything. Lucia had scrambled farther ahead, and Jonas took several long strides to catch up with her.
"All right," she said, turning to face him. "Now we will learn whether this journey has just been an incredible waste of time."
The closer he stood to the monolith, the better Jonas began to feel. The chill had completely dissipated, and a tingling warmth flowed through his body.
"Do you feel that?"
he asked, meeting Lucia's gaze.
"Yes,"
she replied.
"Look," he said, pointing to her hand. "Your ring. It's glowing."
Lucia raised her hand, her eyes wide as she nodded.
"I'm going to hope that's a good sign."
Then the monolith began to glow as well, emitting a violet haze all around them.
"I think it recognizes me," she whispered.
Jonas followed Lucia's lead and placed his palm against the cool crystal.
"Let's just hope it doesn't explode,"
Lucia laughed nervously.
"Please don't even think that."
The brightness of the monolith quickly became so intense that Jonas had to squeeze his eyes shut to protect them from the light. When he opened them only moments later, they were not in the same place as before. Not at all. He turned in a circle to take in the new surroundings. They were now in a grassy field, one that reminded him of the backdrop of his last dream with Timotheus.
"Did it work?"
he asked, then raised a brow at the sorcerer standing next to him.
"Or are we dead?" "You sound so calm, considering we just traveled to another world," she said.
Lucia looked him up and down, studying him from every angle.
"I wasn't sure if you would be able to come here with me. The magic you have inside you must be stronger than I thought.
unsure what happened. It wouldn't have worked for just anyone.
Jonas would have replied, but he was too busy staring at the shining city in the distance.
It did work, he said, stunned. This is a sanctuary.
It is.
I'm going to need a moment, he said.
Jonas bent down, resting his hands on his knees as he tried to catch his breath. His mind was racing. One moment they'd been in the Forbidden Mountains in front of a big shiny rock. Now they were... here. In the sanctuary. He always said he believed only in what he could see with his own eyes. And he could see this. All of it in one sweeping glance. This was real.
No time to rest.
Lucia began walking away from him, in the direction of the city.
We need to find Timotheus.
At first glance, everything seemed normal enough. Blue sky, green grass, colorful flowers, and in the distance, a city made of tall golden buildings loomed. But it also wasn't normal at all, Jonas thought as they walked past two massive stone wheels that lay in the stretch of green land between the meadow and the crystal city itself.
What are they?
He asked.
Those are the gateways immortals use to enter our world, Lucia explained, in their hawk form.
Jonas realized then that he hadn't seen any hawks lately, at least not the kind that were as large and golden as the ones he knew to be spying immortals. Perhaps he just hadn't been paying close enough attention. After the stone gateways, Jonas spotted other differences between the sanctuary and the mortal world. The colors here were more vivid and jewel-like. The grass was a bright emerald green, and the red flowers that dotted the field resembled sparkling rubies. The sky was bright blue, the true color of a perfectly cloudless summer day. But there was no sun here, only an undetermined source of light.
Where's the sun?
He asked. Lucia looked up at the sky, shielding her eyes from the brightness.
They don't seem to have one. But it's always day here.
Jonas shook his head.
How is that possible? Let's focus on getting to the city, shall we? Then you can ask Timotheus any question you want. Hopefully you'll have better luck getting answers than I ever have.
The city had tall protective walls, much like the City of Gold, but its gates were open and unguarded. Lucia hesitated only a moment before she walked through them and into the city itself. Jonas couldn't keep up with all the sights before him. The City of Gold and Hawk's Brow were the two wealthiest cities in Uranus. Gold was inlaid into the stonework of the sparkling roads, and both cities were immaculately clean. Both cities, however, paled in comparison to the beauty and wonder of this one. It seemed to be entirely created out of crystal and silver and transparent, delicate glass. Shining, colorful mosaics coated the maze of roads that led them deeper into this waking dream. The buildings were taller than anything Jonas had ever seen before, even taller than either the Uranian or Lemurian palaces, with spires that reached high into the sky. Here, the individual structures were narrow, with angular, jagged edges that reminded him of the monolith itself. They stretched up twice as tall as a sentry's tower, but he'd never seen a tower made from anything but stone and brick.
Incredible, Jonas muttered. But where is everyone?
Lucia didn't seem to be as awed by the sights as he was. She was far too busy walking deeper into the city.
There are not many immortals here. Considering the size of this city, she said. Perhaps 200 or so. It makes this place seem completely empty.
Yes, it certainly does, he agreed.
Strange, though, she said with a frown.
I would have thought we'd have seen someone by now. He heard the uneasiness in her tone, and it worried him. Jonas followed Lucia to a clearing that looked to be 200 paces in diameter. In the center of this space stood a tower, three times as tall as any other in the city, one that stretched high into the sky like a shining beacon of light.
This tower has been home to the elders, Lucia told him. It's like their palace. When I was here, all the other immortals gathered in this square to hear an announcement from Timotheus.
Jonas scanned the vacant area, frowning.
Something seems wrong, Princess, he said. Do you feel it?
He couldn't exactly put his finger on it. It was like the same chill in the air he'd felt in the Forbidden Mountains, just before they'd reached the Crystal Monolith. For all its exquisite, otherworldly beauty, this city felt like... death, he thought.
Lucia nodded. I feel it too. Where is everyone? This isn't right.
Wouldn't they be concerned that two people just strolled through the city gates unexpectedly? He asked.
They didn't notice me the last time, not right away. But then I met Mia, the girl in the tavern.
The one who couldn't remember anything.
Lucia nodded gravely.
Then, out of the corner of his eye, Jonas saw something flicker on the wall of one of the towers nearby. Light and dark, like the rapid blinking of an eye. It was changing color from a shining silver to... the image of an old man.
Lucia gasped. Timotheus?
Jonas stared up at what indeed looked like a very old Timotheus, with white hair and a wrinkled face.
Yes, it's me, the image said. Your eyes do not deceive you.
Jonas realized then that this wasn't just an image. It was Timotheus. Somehow, appearing on the side of this tower to look down upon them, standing in the middle of the massive empty square.
What happened?
Lucia asked, her eyes wide.
Why do you look like this?
Because I'm dying,
Timotheus replied. His voice was small and distant.
What do you mean, you're dying? Jonas demanded. You're immortal. You can't die.
Immortals most certainly can die, he replied. It just takes us a lot longer than mortals.
Timotheus,
Lucia stepped forward, her shoulders tense.
It's urgent that I speak with you.
Timotheus shook his head.
You shouldn't be here. I saw in a vision that you would both come, but I hoped very much you'd change your minds. Alas, you didn't. But now you need to leave immediately.
Lucia's hands fisted at her sides.
I can't leave. Kain's taken my daughter and my magic. It's weak right now. I don't know if I can imprison him and the others.
Her voice was shaking.
I need to save my daughter, and I don't know how. I came here to ask for your help.
I can be no help to you, he replied grimly. Not anymore.
But you have to be, Jonas said, stepping forward. We need answers. We came all this way. I don't even know how it's possible I'm here.
You don't? Timotheus chuckled. Young man, you have so much magic within you right now, I'm surprised it's not bursting through your very skin.
He could sense that? Jonas didn't feel any different than ever before.
How do you know that?
I know that because I've placed a great deal of that magic within you myself.
Jonas gaped up at him.
You what?
Some mortals over the centuries have proven themselves to be excellent carriers of magic. You are one of them.
Lucia looked back and forth between the two of them.
What do you mean? He's a carrier of magic.
Just like a rich mortal uses a bank to store his gold, and the same bank to borrow from,
Timotheus explained.
This is Jonas's purpose, and part of his destiny. I thought he would prove very useful, and he has.
Wait, Jonas said. What are you saying? You put most of this magic inside me? How did you do that?
Timotheus gazed down at him patiently.
You wouldn't understand even if I told you. And there's no time to explain.
Make time, he growled. I already know the magic inside me is from Phaedra, when she died after saving my life, and Olivia, from the magic she used to heal me.
Yes, and that is how I knew you were a vessel. I gave you more magic in the last dream of yours I entered, as much as I could. You already know that whatever is shared in your unconscious mind can become reality.
The Golden Blade. So Timotheus transferred magic into Jonas, just as he'd given him the blade which had traveled from one world to another. He stared up at the massive form of Timotheus on the side of the tower in awe. The immortal looked like a man, walked and talked like a man, but he was no man. He was a god. All the immortals were gods. For someone who had never believed in anyone or anything, this was a stunning realization.
Why did you place this magic inside me? Jonas began, more tentatively now. Was it because you knew you'd become weak like this?
Partially, Timotheus allowed.
But now what? You take it back, recharge yourself, and your good is new?
Timotheus gazed down at them for a moment, his lips pursed in thought.
No.
No? Lucia said, stunned. What do you mean, no? I need you, Timotheus. There's no one else who can help me. Caian has kidnapped my daughter, and I'm afraid I can't save her.
I've seen your future, Lucia Demora.
Timotheus said then evenly.
I've seen you standing next to the fire, kindred, with the crystal orbs before you, your lips moving as you complete the ritual that will empower him and the other three like they've never been empowered before. And you do so of your own free will, just as you stood on the side of the cliff that night, that fateful night, ready to help him destroy the world. You are aligned with Caian. And any excuses having to do with Lyssa are only that. Excuses.
Lucia's face was red, her eyes full of fury.
How dare you say that to me? I am not aligned with Caian, and I hate him!
Timotheus shrugged his shoulders.
We don't change. We are who we are throughout our lives. We can try other paths, other roads, but it never works. I am no different. I was created to be a guardian to this place.
He waved his wrinkled hand toward the land beyond the city gates.
And to the mortal world. I tried, I did. And I'm still trying at this very moment. But I'm failing. As all the others of my kind have failed. It is over, Lucia. The fight is over and we have lost. We were never meant to win.
Jonas had listened silently to what the immortal said, and to Lucia's reaction, and now he joined her in her outrage.
Is that it? You're giving up just like that?
You don't know how long and how hard I fought to reach this point, Timotheus said wearily. I thought there was a chance, and I did what I could to help. But in the end none of this matters. What will be, and we must accept it.
Jonas's fury began to boil over. He moved closer to the tower, as if he could reach into the image and pull Timotheus out.
That's so typical of you. Speaking in riddles, even now. Lucia needs your damn help to fix this bloody mess, and you're up there on your... whatever magic that is that you're on right now, looking down your nose at us. Detached from it all, safe and sound in your tall tower, while we're out here fighting, bleeding and dying.
Fighting, bleeding, dying.
Timotheus shook his head.
It is the way of mortals. Past, present and future. What little future is left anyway? Everything ends. Nothing is truly immortal.
Timotheus.
Lucia's tone had calmed. She clasped her hands before her,
as she gazed up at the image of him on the side of the tower. "Where are the others to help you?"
"The others are gone," he replied flatly.
I saw Mia. I saw her in a Pelsian village not far from the monolith." She shook her head. "She couldn't remember anything. Not being an immortal, not the sanctuary, not meeting me before." "You did that to her," Jonas said, filling in the blanks for himself. "You hurt her. You stole her memories, and the others as well."
"Jumping to conclusions like always," Timotheus replied. "Hasty in your decisions, rash and bold, and so very often wrong."
"Then what actually happened?" Lucia asked. Jonas didn't want to listen to any more lies. It had been a waste of time to come here. He was about to say so when Timotheus finally replied.
"I called in a favor from an old friend," he said. "One with the means and the magic to erase memories. There were so few of us left, and no one but me knew the truth of what this place had become. They only thought it to be a beautiful prison, one they could leave in hawk form to gaze upon the lives of mortals. Over the centuries, some chose to stay in your world as exiles, their magic fading over the remainder of their limited lives. Exiles as a whole, I found, are happy with their decision to leave. To live a mortal life that is imperfect and short and beautifully flawed."
"So you gave them that chance," Lucia said, her voice barely more than a whisper. "Or the others that were left. You exiled them and had their memories erased so they could live a mortal life without ties to the sanctuary." Timotheus nodded. Jonas wanted to hate him. He wanted to pull the golden dagger that Timotheus had somehow given to him that night through his dream and throw it at the tower right here and right now. But he didn't. He studied the old and weary face of this man. This man who had lived for countless centuries, with one question rising in his mind that he desperately needed answered.
"Why not you too?" Jonas asked. "If what you say is true, why wouldn't you choose to live a beautifully flawed life as a mortal?"
"Because," Timotheus said sadly, "I had to hold on for just a little while longer. I had to hope that in these last moments, someone somewhere might surprise me."
"Surprise you how?" Lucia asked.
"By proving me wrong."
"Come down here," she urged him. "Help me imprison the kindred. Everything will return to normal then, here and in the mortal world. You can recover from what has happened to you, and then you can be whatever you want to be, wherever you want to be it."
"I had hoped that might be possible. But it's far too late for that now."
He looked down, shaking his head.
"The end is here. Finally, after all these years. And now, if you have any hope of survival, you must—"
He flinched then, as if a wave of pain had hit him. When he looked up at them, his eyes were glowing with a strange white light that was nearly blinding. "What?" Jonas asked as Lucia clutched his arm. "What must we do?"
"You must run,"
Timotheus said. And then he yelled it.
"Run!"
The glow from his eyes brightened so much that the entire image of Timotheus turned stark white, and then he disappeared completely. A piercing beam of light exploded from the narrow spire, along with a painful screeching sound. Jonas staggered backward away from the tower and clamped his hands over his ears, meeting Lucia's wide-eyed gaze. When the sound ceased, Lucia turned back toward the tower.
"He's dead. Timotheus is dead."
Jonas stared at her with shock.
"Dead? But how can you know that for sure?"
She frantically looked around as if searching for something specific.
"His magic is gone. It was the only thing keeping this world from complete destruction. That's why he stayed here, That's why I never physically left this place. And then Jonas heard a cracking sound in the distance that reminded him of thunder during a powerful Palcean rainstorm, but much louder, much bigger. When he looked toward the tall silver tower again, the new reflection on its surface turned his blood to ice. Beyond the city walls, the world was falling apart, literally falling apart. Massive chunks of earth crumbled off the side of a cliff. The eternally blue and cloudless sky shattered like glass and dropped away to reveal darkest night. Green hills and fields fell into a bottomless, black abyss. Jonas was frozen in place by the horror of it all, a nightmare come to life. "Jonas!" Lucia shouted. "Jonas!" He finally looked at her as the first crystal tower fell, shattering into the gaping chasm. "I refuse to die here," she said as she grabbed his wrist. "There's too much left to do. Come on!" He didn't argue. He ran by her side as they moved toward the tower itself. Lucia searched frantically for a door until one slid open seemingly out of nowhere. "Where are we going?" he demanded. "There's another monolith in here. It's how Timotheus sent me back to the mortal world last time." They ran down a long corridor with a heavy metal door at the end of it. Lucia pressed her hand flat against it. Nothing happened. "Come on!" she yelled at it as she tried again, this time pressing both hands against cold metal. It finally slid open. "We can use the monolith to escape this?" Jonas asked. "To be honest, I don't know for sure if it will work. So if you believe in any god or goddess that's ever existed, it's time to start praying." He almost laughed at that. "How about I just believe in you?" Lucia's gaze locked with his for a moment before she pulled him into the next room with her. Inside was a glowing violet monolith, a smaller version of the one in the mountains. "He knew," Lucia said, and Jonas could barely hear her over the sound of the sanctuary's destruction. "Timotheus made sure we had a way out before he died." The ground shook, and with every step they took, pieces of it began to fall away. "Close your eyes!" Lucia yelled, grabbing Jonas's hand in hers as she reached for the crystal surface. Upon contact, it became blindingly bright. The noise that came from it was deafening, like rolling thunder. Jonas felt Lucia squeeze his hand harder. This world was ending, and it was taking them with it. But then the monolith was gone, the room was gone, and they were standing in the middle of another field, next to an ancient, crumbling stone wheel jutting out of the ground. Jonas turned around in a circle, barely believing what he'd just experienced. "We made it. We made it. You, Lucia de Mora, are absolutely brilliant!" "It worked," she said wearily. "I can't believe it, actually." Jonas grabbed her face between his hands and pressed his mouth against hers, kissing her hard and deep. When he finally broke away, he staggered back from her, stunned. "She's going to kill me for that," he thought. Lucia looked at him, her eyes wide and her fingers pressed to her lips.
"Why would you say that?"
"Say what?" he managed.
"That I'm going to kill you."
He stared at her, confused.
"I didn't say it. I thought it."
"You thought it?"
She studied him closely.
"Can you hear this?"
Lucia's lips hadn't moved, but he still distinctively heard her voice, every word. Jonas's heart pounded.
"I can hear your thoughts. How is that possible?" "You have Timotheus's magic inside you. It has to be the reason you were also able to enter my dream."
Did he know this would happen? Jonas thought, both disturbed and intrigued by the possibilities. Then Lucia spoke aloud.
"I can't deal with this right now. I have to focus on Lyssa and on..."
She cried out and fell to the ground in a heap. Jonas was at her side in an instant, kneeling on the tall green grass.
"What's wrong?"
he asked, stroking her dark hair back from her face.
"It's Cayan,"
she said in a pained whisper.
"I felt him just now. In my head."
"What? How?"
"I didn't know it was possible. I tried to summon him at the palace after Lyssa was taken, but I failed.
Now I think he's summoning me.
Jonas swore under his breath, then helped her to her feet. Whatever he's doing right now, ignore him. He has no power over you.
He has Lyssa.
Her voice broke. Jonas scanned the area, spotting the outline of a familiar city in the distance.
I think we're in Uranus. That's Hawk's Brow over there. That means we're only a few hours away from the palace.
Lucia's face had gone pale, her eyes haunted.
That's where he is.
What?
The City of Gold, she whispered. He's in the City of Gold right now. He wants me to come to him. He's stronger. So much stronger than before.
She drew in a shaky breath.
Oh, Jonas. I am so sorry.
He frowned.
Sorry for what?
She touched his face, placing her palms against his cheeks and drew him closer. He didn't resist. For a moment, a heartbeat, he was certain she would kiss him again. Lucia looked deeply into his eyes.
I need to take it all this time. Timotheus had to know I would need this, that I'd do this. He knew everything.
What? Then he began to feel a painful, draining sensation, like he'd felt the night of the rainstorm, the night he'd given her his magic to survive Lyssa's birth. But this was worse, deeper somehow, like she was stealing not just magic, but life itself from him, as if she'd stabbed him in his gut and his blood left him, not in a slow drip, but in a sudden and massive gush. Before he could process what this meant, coldness fell upon him like a heavy blanket. He tried to move, tried to pull away, but it was impossible. He fell into a bottomless darkness from which he didn't know if he'd ever return. But he did. Jonas woke slowly, unsure how much time had passed. It was still light, and he lay next to the stone wheel. Lucia was gone. He weakly pushed himself up to his unsteady feet, then pulled open the front of his shirt. Only the lightest trace remained of the spiral mark on his chest. Lucia had stolen his magic, and he knew without a doubt she had nearly taken his life in the process. Jonas felt at his belt for the golden dagger, the one given to him to allegedly destroy magic and kill an evil sorceress if there was no other option. Lucia had gone to Kyan's side the moment he'd summoned her. Whether she did it to save her daughter's life didn't matter. There'd been other solutions, other options. Jonas would have helped her if only she'd asked. But she hadn't changed after all. Timotheus had believed it was Lucia's destiny to help the Kindred destroy the world. And Jonas knew it was his destiny to stop her.
Chapter 28. Magnus. Uranus.
Magnus and Cleo followed the river to the next village. Once there, they stole a pair of horses and rode to Viridi, where Magnus hoped Asher and Valya would meet them. The weight of the ring on Magnus's hand felt heavier than before. He'd known it was powerful enough to save the life of its wearer, but not that it could also take a life. This ring had also affected Kyan, allowing Magnus the chance to escape him. This ring had caused Cleo pain when it had been momentarily on her finger. What else could it do? Magnus wondered grimly. As they drew closer to their destination, Magnus realized that Cleo was watching him, her grip tight on the reins of her horse.
Are you all right? She asked. After what happened with Curtis?
Am I all right?
His brows went up at the question.
You are possessed by a malevolent water goddess who wishes to help her siblings destroy the world. But you are worried about me?
She shrugged.
I guess I am.
I'm fine, he assured her.
Good.
Cleo had told him on the ride that the water kindred could speak to her.
urging her from inside her mind to let the waves in her drowning spells take her under, to give up control of her body. It infuriated Magnus that he didn't know how to save her from this demon that wanted to steal life away. Cleo also shared that Nick had been conscious enough to allow her to escape from the temple, that he told her to destroy the orbs, that they were the kindred's physical anchors to this world, that without them, they would be vanquished. He hadn't believed her at first, convinced it had been a trick Kyan had played to manipulate her, but she'd been certain it was Nick. Certain enough that Magnus had stopped their journey long enough to take the aquamarine orb from her and attempt to shatter it with a rock. He tried until his hands bled and his muscles ached, but it didn't work. The orb remained intact, without even a crack. He had damaged the Earth Kindred in the past, throwing it against a stone wall at the Lemurian Palace in a fit of rage. This had triggered an earthquake. But that, Cleo reminded him, was when the Earth Kindred had been within the obsidian orb, an orb that had healed its damage after the Kindred had escaped from it. It was more than obsidian, he realized. More than aquamarine. The orbs were pieces of magic unto themselves. And, despite his initial desire to find these priceless, omnipotent treasures, he now hated every single one of them, because their very existence threatened the life of the woman he loved more than anything or anyone else in this world. He knew Cleo wasn't helpless. Far from it. He'd witnessed her defend herself both verbally and physically in the past. But this threat wasn't as simple as escaping an assassin's blade, or thrusting arrows into the throats of enemies at close range in a desperate quest for survival. They needed a sorceress. But they would have to settle for a powerful witch. They entered Viridi just as the morning sunlight began to move across the large village. Their horses' hooves clip-clopped along the sparkling cobblestone roads, lined with stone buildings and villas. It was much like the maze of the City of Gold. One could get lost along a road if they weren't careful. Magnus forced himself to concentrate, to remember the way to their destination. Finally, thankfully, they arrived at the large inn and tavern in the center of the village, the one with a black wooden sign in front emblazoned with a gilded name, the Silver Toad. Leaving the horses with a waiting stableman, Magnus directed Cleo in through the entrance to the tavern, currently vacant, but for one person seated at a table in the corner near a blazing fireplace. At the sight of them, Asher rose to his feet. "You made it," he said to Cleo, as he took her hands in his expression filled with relief. "Yes," she replied. "And you saw Kyan?" he ventured. She nodded. "I did. And Nick, he's still here. And I managed to speak with him for a few moments. He helped me escape. He's fighting as hard as he can." Asher sat down heavily in his chair. "He's not lost to us. No. There's still hope." "I'm very glad to hear that," he whispered. "Where is Valya?" Magnus asked, scanning the dark tavern. "Did you get her room at the inn?" "She's not here," Asher replied. Magnus's gaze shot to the Cretian. "What?" Then he noticed the bloody bandages wrapped around both of Asher's hands. "I tried to summon her," Asher said, "multiple times. I followed the instructions perfectly, but she never arrived." Magnus hung his head, pressing his hands to his temples. "Where is Bruno?" he asked. "Is he here?" Asher nodded. "He's here." "Who's Bruno?" Cleo asked. "Bruno!" Magnus yelled at the top of his lungs. The man in question appeared from the kitchen area, wiping his hands on his dusty apron. Deep lines fanned out from the corners of his eyes as he smiled broadly at the sight before him.
"Prince Magnus! Such a great delight to see you again!"
He looked at Cleo and his eyes widened.
"Oh, and you've brought your beautiful wife with you this time, Princess Cleona. It is a true honor."
He bowed deeply before her.
"And it's lovely to meet you too,"
Cleo said kindly when he rose from his bow, absently tucking a piece of her hair behind her ear. Magnus was dismayed to see that the blue lines had extended further along her left temple. He tore his gaze from Cleo to look at Bruno.
"Where is Valya?"
"Prince Asha asked me the very same question last night," he replied. "And I have the same reply for you. I'm afraid I don't know."
"Asha tried to summon her, but it didn't work," Magnus said.
"Sometimes it doesn't. Valya chooses when and where to appear."
At the furious expression that fell over Magnus's face, the old man took a step backward.
"Apologies, Your Highness, but I don't control her."
"We didn't even know if she could help," Asher said. "We were only hoping."
"Hoping," Magnus muttered.
"There's that useless word again."
"It's not useless," Cleo said. "Hope is powerful." Magnus shook his head.
"No, a sorceress is powerful, and that's what we need. Valya was useless too, a waste of time. I need to find Lucia."
"Where?" Asher said, his tone sharp.
"She's been gone a week with no message. She is on her own quest, Magnus, one that doesn't align with ours. You're wrong!"
Magnus threw the words at Asher like weapons, hoping to inflict injury.
"My sister won't abandon us. Not now. Not when I need her the most."
But he had to admit in his heart, he didn't believe this anymore. Lucia was gone, and he didn't know when and if she'd ever return. And Cleo, he turned to her. Her earnest, hopeful expression crushed his heart. He roared out in anger, grabbed hold of a heavy wooden table and flipped it over. Bruno staggered back, horrified. Magnus's current increased strength, strength he'd had since crawling out of his own grave, was courtesy of the Bloodstone. Powerful death magic existed within the ring on his finger, but death magic couldn't help Cleo.
"Magnus,"
Cleo said sharply, pulling him from his thoughts.
"I need to speak with you in private,
now." He knew she was angry with him for scaring Bruno, for acting disrespectful and ungrateful toward Asher, for wanting to crush anything that stood in the way of finding the answers he needed to save the girl standing before him. To hell with the rest of the world. Cleo was all he cared about. Sullenly, he followed her to a room in the inn that Bruno swiftly provided for them.
"What do you have to say to me privately?" he said when she closed the door. "Do you wish to scold me for my behavior out there? To make me see reason and embrace hope like you do? To make me believe that we still have a chance to make this right again?"
"No," she replied simply. He frowned.
"No?"
Cleo shook her head. "There's nothing right about this." Magnus inhaled deeply.
"I acted like a bully to Bruno."
"Yes, you did."
"I think I scared him."
She nodded. "You can be very scary."
"Yes. And I can also be scared. And I am, right now."
Magnus took her hands in his gaze locking with hers.
"I want to help you."
Tears welled in her eyes.
"I know." "What do we do, Cleo?"
He hated the weakness that had crept into his voice.
"How am I supposed to save you from this?"
She frowned.
"It's talking to me right now.
The water kindred.
It wants me to leave you. To return to Cain. It says that I've made him incredibly angry for leaving when he'd been trying to help me."
Magnus took her by her shoulders and stared deep into her blue-green eyes.
"Listen to me, demon. You need to get out of my wife now. Do so of your own volition and find another body to steal. I don't really give a damn who it is, but leave Cleo alone, or I swear I will destroy you."
Cleo's frown deepened.
"It finds you amusing."
Magnus had never hated anything so much in his entire life.
nor had he ever felt so powerless.
"I don't know what to do."
She took his hand in hers.
"Wait.
Nick, you told me that when you found Cain in the forest, after you escaped from the grave, you touched him. And that, whatever you did, is what jarred him awake and allowed him to start fighting Cain for control."
Cleo held up his hand.
"It's because of this ring. It has to be."
"Yes," he whispered, thinking hard. "I know."
"Elementia is life magic," she said. "And whatever this is, wherever it came from, it's the opposite."
He nodded.
"So what? I'll ask Cain to try this ring on and see what happens."
"No," she said immediately. "He'd kill you before you get within 3 paces of him."
Magnus met her gaze.
"It might be worth the risk."
"You will not do that," she said firmly. "We will find another way."
"You think it's that easy?"
"I know it's not."
She bit her bottom lip, then moved to the window that looked out at the Viridi street outside the inn, already busy with citizens emerging from their homes for the start of a new day.
"Tell me, Magnus, do you ever wish you could go back to before all of this? When life was normal?"
"No," he replied.
She turned a look of surprise on him.
"Just no?"
"Just no."
"Why?"
"Because far too much has changed for me to wish for exactly how it was before."
Magnus allowed himself a moment to think of life before war, before the Kindred, and before Cleo. He hadn't been happy, even then. He'd been lost, searching for meaning in his life, half aspiring to be like his father, half wishing his father were dead.
"Besides, I don't really think the two of us would have gotten along very well before."
He raised a brow at her.
"You were an insufferable, vacuous party girl, from what I've heard."
"True,"
she laughed.
"And you were a cold, brooding jackass with feelings for your sister."
Magnus cringed.
"Times change."
"Indeed they do."
"I remember you, you know,"
he said softly.
"When we were only children. From the visit when I got this."
Magnus brushed his fingers over his scar.
"You were a shining light even at, what, 4 or 5 years old?"
He pictured the small golden-haired princess that had captured his attention and interest, even as a young boy.
"I had a fantasy for a time that I would come to live with you and your family instead of my own."
Cleo's eyes widened.
"Really?"
He nodded, the long-repressed memory coming back to him vividly.
"In fact, once I ran away from home and got into a great deal of trouble with that goal in mind. My father,"
he sighed.
"My father was not kind. Not even on his kindest day."
"Your father loved you.
In his own way."
Cleo smiled at him.
"And I know for a fact that your mother loved you very much."
He raised a brow.
"What makes you say that?"
"She told me once that she would kill me if I ever hurt you."
He stared at her, then shook his head.
"That sounds like my mother."
A shadow crossed her expression, and her smile fell away.
"I went on to hurt you quite a lot."
"And I you. Far too many times to count."
Magnus took her hands in his, pulling her closer to him.
"We will figure this out, Cleo. I swear that to you."
He leaned in to kiss her, needing to feel her lips against his, but was interrupted by a loud bang on the other side of the tavern.
"So much for our private discussion,"
he said with annoyance. He crossed the room and opened the door, shocked at who stood on the other side. It was Enzo, his face bloody, half the hair on his head burned off. The guard fell to his knees, gasping for breath, a rolled-up piece of parchment dropping from his grip. Cleo was at his side in an instant, helping him to his feet. Magnus reached down to grab the parchment.
"Enzo," Cleo gasped. "What happened to you?"
"Kyan knows where you are," Enzo managed. "He can sense you. Because the water kindred is inside you. You're all connected."
Heart pounding, Magnus crossed the room to look out the window, searching for any sign of their enemy.
"Where is he now?"
"He's not here," Enzo said.
"He sent me with this message.
For you, princess."
Magnus quickly unrolled the parchment, holding it out for Cleo to read along with him.
"I've tried to be patient and kind with you, but that didn't work. Come to me immediately. If you don't, everyone in your beloved Golden City will burn. There's no other way for this to end. Deny me, and I promise endless suffering for everyone and everything you love."
At Cleo's pained gasp, Magnus threw the parchment away from him.
"He's bluffing," Magnus growled.
"He's not," Enzo said, his voice strained. "I saw what he could do. His fire. It's not like normal fire. It's deeper. More painful than anything I've ever felt before. I never thought that could be possible."
"You're not helping," Magnus snapped.
"Magnus, I know you want to save me," Cleo said, her eyes filled with tears. "But there's no way. I'm so close now to losing control of this. If Taran couldn't resist, I won't be able to. And I believe what Kyan says. He will burn the city."
"No, you're not going to him. We're going to find another answer."
"But he'll destroy the city."
"I don't care about the damn city. I do,"
she said fiercely.
"Damn it!"
Magnus's anguished gaze met Cleo's.
"Stay here. I need to get Asha. We need to try summoning Valya again."
He glared at Enzo.
"Stay with her."
He left the room and rushed down the stairs, searching for Asha. He found the prince talking with Bruno near the kitchen.
"What?"
Asha exclaimed when he saw Magnus's pained expression.
"Whatever it takes," Magnus managed to say. "We need that witch's help. Kyan's in the City of Gold holding it hostage until Cleo comes to his side."
"No," Asher said, his voice pained. "We need time."
"There's no time."
He looked down at Asher's bandaged hands.
"We'll use my blood, or we'll find a dozen turtles to sacrifice to that woman, but we must be quick about it."
"The princess should be with us,"
Asher said, nodding grimly.
"I agree. And Enzo's here. He delivered the message. He has plenty of blood in him to help. Come with me."
With Asher in tow, Magnus took the stairs to the second floor two at a time and burst into the room where he'd left Cleo. All that was in the room was a hastily scrawled note on a torn piece of parchment left on the cot.
"I'm sorry, but I have to do this. I love you."
Magnus crumpled the note in his fist and threw it onto the floor. Asher picked it up and scanned his eyes over it.
"She went to the city, didn't she?"
he said. Magnus was already out of the room, headed toward the exit to the inn. He had to get to her before it was too late. Chapter 29 Amara Cratia.
"Let me see if I understand this," Felix said when Amara was finished explaining everything to him and Nerissa. "Your granny kidnapped Lyssa from right under Princess Lucia's nose to use her blood in magic potions, and Micah, the leader of the revolution, is going to be executed at your ascension ceremony. And you're not all right with either of those things."
How could he sound so calm when Amara had just shared so much she felt exhausted from the confession?
"That's right."
Felix glanced at Nerissa.
"I'm going to go ahead and kill her now." "Felix," Nerissa snapped. Try to think, would you? I am thinking. She's a proven liar and manipulator.